This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Kissel's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to our big two at two. The difference in game two of the NBA Finals last night and why the Gamecocks football team actually reminds me of a baseball team. Get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show. Which is brought to you by Baker Roofing. Baker Roofing has been in business for over 100 years. And they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. And in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can also check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. You know, we closed out last hour talking about the Olympics. And I just wonder if it's, to use that saying, if the juice is worth the squeeze, right? If the concerns become greater than the rewards, I suppose. No fans are allowed. That was the announcement yesterday at the Olympics. Tokyo, the area, they're still struggling with COVID-19. Athletes coming from all over the world to participate should the Olympics be held as they are scheduled to begin 2 weeks from today. And to be frank, I don't have a strong opinion. I can be easily swayed. I'm always open-minded as well. So I got this message during the commercial break that the Olympics are for the athletes who have been training for the last 4 years to represent their country. It's not about the fans. The fans can watch on TV. And I do agree with that. You know, the Olympics are unique in that for a lot of these sports, basketball is a little different. I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest I'm not the biggest viewer of the Olympics. In the winter, I love watching curling. I will watch the hell out of curling. I'll watch every curling event. I love curling, and I'll watch the hockey in the winter. And really, that's about it. And in the summer, I'll watch the basketball, and that's about it. I'm not a huge Olympics guy. I never have been. But the Olympics is unique in the sense that for a lot of the sports, right, basketball being different, they have their NBA careers. They're fine. The Olympics is separate. That's why guys usually only play in one or two Olympics. In fact, LeBron is not playing this year, and everyone's making a big deal like, oh, LeBron already holds the record for most Olympics participated, which I think is like only three. Right? So usually the basketball players, we got our own NBA careers. It's cool to go represent the country, but you do it once, maybe twice, and then it's like, all right, now let me take my summer off. I got my own season, and that's where I'm making all my money. But for most of the other sports, they don't get many opportunities at the Olympics, but because of their window, not because they have these other careers to focus on, but because at a certain age, you just can't compete anymore. I mean, how many Olympics do even the great athletes participate in? How many Olympics do we really get Michael Phelps in or any of the Olympics or any of the athletes over the years that won so many? And for them, that's like their NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. Right, that's where they get the sponsorship deals, and that's where they get the attention, and that's where they make their money, and they become a household name. Michael Phelps can do Subway commercials now because of what he did at the Olympics. Prior to that, you probably had no idea who he was. But then you watch him on that big stage, he's set up for the rest of his life. He can go on talking tours, he could start a podcast, whatever it is, and you only have so many of the Olympic events to be able to, or so many of the Olympic years, I guess, to be able to participate. Right? You can only participate in about two or three of them, and then your career is done with, and that's it. And you're a track star, that's your Super Bowl, and you get it every 4 years and probably only twice in your career, and then you move. That's like your retirement. That's like Tom Brady moving on finally. Like, all right, well, that was my career. All right, now it's on to something else. So I do get that. The Olympics are about the countries, right? For lack of a better term, the battle between the competition. That would be the right term. The competition between countries. And also for those athletes that this is their time to shine. This is their Super Bowl. This would be like if the NFL had to cancel the Super Bowl this past year because of COVID. How crushing that would be for the fans or the teams and the players involved. So I do get all of that. Like, even if the fans can't be there, who cares? It's about these athletes that have been training now because it didn't happen last year, 5 years, waiting 5 years for this event, and may not ever get back to the Olympics. And for most sports and athletes, this is the pinnacle. This is winning the Super Bowl. This is the top of the top. You know, best in the world. Especially if you win the gold medal. I mean, that's exactly what you are. You're the best in the world at what you do. So I do get all that. My concern is just get all these people together in still a hot spot for COVID, different countries, and then they go back home to other countries and this and that. But if you tell me that we could pull off the Olympics safely where there won't be any issue and everyone's going to be, you know, they got a good plan set up and everyone's going to be safe and taken care of, and the only difference will be no fans in attendance, then yeah, I can go out and hold the events. Because we just had a basketball season last year without any fans, and in the end it was good enough. It was fine. Right, we had a football season with limited fans, baseball with no fans last year. I still watched every night. So I do get that. My concern is just, is the juice worth the squeeze? That we're talking now, it's 2 weeks out. Tokyo just went into this this lockdown. Nobody's allowed around. Even media is very restricted, right? All this stuff. And it's like, I mean, should we even bother with people from all these different countries putting more people at risk or in jeopardy? But at the same time, I was also the one pushing for other sports. I think it's different when you're talking about, you know, the Big Ten playing football and doing so. I think that's a little more controlled than when you're talking multiple countries and doing it in Japan instead of Ohio. So those would be my concerns as well. If you're a big Olympic fan, you've been waiting for this moment. You don't want them to. You can't wait for 2 weeks from now when it gets underway. But obviously, it's a huge deal for these athletes, and they want the opportunity to go compete. They have the opportunity to opt out, right? You don't have to go if you're that concerned over COVID. So that's the other thing. Just like I'm kind of contradicting the same arguments I made for, say, college football a few months ago. That if they want to play, go let them play. It's the same idea here, I guess. I should be listening to my own advice from months ago. That if these athletes are willing to go over there and compete, let them go compete. Keep the fans away, right? That's the safest way to do it. Get them out of harm's way. Media members, keep them away so they're out of harm's way. And if the athletes want to go compete, go ahead. And then you just quarantine, you know, on the way back to your country or when you first arrive or whatever, and try to do it safely. So I think I've actually talked myself into going against my original point. How about that? You know what? Now I'm all in on the Olympics 2 weeks from now. Make it happen. But yesterday they announced no fans are allowed. There are protests going on. People are happy that they may still have the Olympics in Japan. We'll see what it's like 2 weeks from now. I know there's talks about not having the opening ceremonies or the closing ceremonies because you don't want all the people together and bringing in other people that are involved in the ceremonies, and without fans, it's not as like powerful as a moment or whatever. Talks of that. Also, you talk about the finances, right? It's very expensive to put on the Olympics. Japan was probably counting on even just the 10,000 local fans. Now they won't be allowed. So you lose out on that money. It's strictly only a TV event. That could hurt the economy of Tokyo. You know, there's a lot to it than just simply should they play the events, should they have the events or not. It's a little more complex than that. And I just wonder if it's still worth all of the trouble. For the athletes, it obviously is. And I'm talking this out with you on air. But the big news for the Olympics being that yesterday they announced no fans. So it will be certainly, at minimum, a very unique Olympics this year without any fans. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. That's the number to always give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Tim is with us. Tim, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke.
Yeah, we got you. What's going on?
Hey, Luke, this is Tony.
Oh, Tony. Sorry. Wrong name. Tony, what's going on? How are you?
Well, not all much. Trying to get ready to enjoy this Friday afternoon.
Yes.
Luke, it's a shame that I know the Summer Olympics were postponed already,
right?
But it's too bad they couldn't delay it maybe to the fall, give Japan a little more time to, you know, get those vaccinations spread around. But, mm-hmm. You know, it's like you said, if you pushed it to the fall, then they're going to be competing with football, and that's a problem with this country.
Yeah, certainly. I know it wasn't easy to move in the first place from 2020 to 2021, and I don't know if it'll be easy to move it again at this point, even to the fall, or try to do it next year or anything like that. I almost feel like the train's left the station. They got to try to either do it now or not do it again for 4 years.
Right. Well, last week I was mentioned to a friend of mine, an old friend, about the Euro Cup.
Yes.
And I told him haven't been in France for the last Euro Cup when France actually won it.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting, and he goes, "Well, I don't see what the big deal is." And I said, "Well, in this country, we're usually following high school sports, college sports. We might in the pros we got cities, battling cities across the country. But when it comes to soccer, especially like the Euro Cup and so forth, it's country against country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's big time for those countries. I mean, when we were in France, there was a lot of fans there from Northern Ireland. And then there was Iceland. They had a really good soccer team, and it was pretty exciting to be a part of it, all the fans and so forth. So anyhow, I agree that it's kind of hard for some Americans to see what the big deal is when you have in like the Olympics, and the Olympics, just like Euro Cup, it's country against country, and it means a lot more to those individual athletes.
Yeah, it sure does. And I appreciate the call, Tony. We have all our other professional sports that we are obviously so into. That's why I have this job and this show, and that's why you're listening. Right? We're so into the Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, all that sort of stuff, that the Olympics can take a back seat for a lot of sports fans. Like, I'll admit it, myself included. The Olympics is not number one on my list this time of year. I'm still more into Major League Baseball and getting ready for the football season even. But in other countries, especially when you talk about soccer, soccer is obviously not the most popular sport in this country, but worldwide it is. And you see that at these events, and people are into it. World Cup, Euro Cups, and I'll tell you what, Sunday I'll be sitting down and I'll be watching as Italy takes on England in the Euro final on Sunday. And England, I'm not the biggest soccer guy, but I have buddies who are huge soccer. You know, they grew up playing soccer. They played college soccer. They follow the sport very closely. And, in the group text, they're always talking about it. So I got good friends that are big soccer guys, and they said that England, I guess they're like the Yankee fans of the soccer world, or, I don't know, Dodgers, Lakers, right? Patriots nowadays, these fans that are very, very annoying, very, out there, really into their team. Arrogant would be the proper term. And to my knowledge, they haven't done enough winning for the arrogance they've had over the past decades. But I'll be watching Sunday, rooting for Italy. And if they win, I'll be here Monday with my Italy soccer shirt on for the first time in years. By the way, the Wimbledon, we have Matteo Berrettini, the first Italian to reach a Grand Slam final in 45 years. So I'll be pulling for him this weekend as well. Big weekend for the Italian athletes. Let me tell you, these other events in other countries. Wimbledon, the Euro 20. My only complaint is the Euro 2020. Why are we calling it the Euro 2020? I know it's supposed to take place in 2020, but right now it's 2021. We could have updated that, called the Euro 2021. Just like these Olympics. I think they're referring to it, the Olympics, as same idea, 2020. I know they're supposed to take place in 2020. All your signage and some everything was probably already made up, but it's 2021. Let's call it the 2021 Summer Olympics, the 2021 Euro Cup. Go Italia Sunday afternoon. I'll be tuned in. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Back to the phones. Mike is with us. Mike, what's going on? How are you?
Luke.
What's up?
I can't figure out, how can a sports guy not support the Olympics? It baffles me. So I've narrowed it down to three things.
Okay.
Right? I listen quite a bit, so I know a little bit about you. My guess is you're low 30s, mid-30s in age. Am I off on that?
Very close. I'm about to turn 30, actually.
So that's one thing, but that's theory number three. Theory number two is you're from Connecticut, right?
I am, yes.
So you're not necessarily really from an area that ever hosted, or have you ever been to an Olympics?
No, absolutely not. I have not, no.
So I think that might be one reason why is if you ever go to an Olympic event, if you're fortunate enough to be in a city that has one, like I was raised up near Lake Placid in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
So very quaint, lovely little town. Lots of crazy town passion. Obviously, all these countries come in and overwhelm a small town like that. And I went to Atlanta in 96. And so I've been to a couple. And I've never been in a situation where you're walking. And, Atlanta is Atlanta, right? Just like most big cities, there's scary areas of town. But I've never felt so unbelievably secure when 100 people from the Netherlands come up in their orange over the hill in Atlanta. And you have no fear when you have hundreds of thousands of visitors coming from their countries. And it's just a feeling that you get of global warmness. And I don't know what the right term would be, but you really feel united. And that feeling is something that I think addicts people to the actual movement itself. And then, so the last thing I'll say, and I'll stop with my theories, is did you play sports when you were younger?
I did.
You did. So as an amateur athlete, you still don't love the fact that this is it for them. I know you were talking about it. So anyway, I was just baffled. I'm baffled.
Oh, well, I appreciate your theories. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the call, Mike. I think all that comes into play. I'm just not the biggest. I've never been the biggest Olympics guy. As I said, I'm more into the other sports that we have here in this country. But I can appreciate and understand certainly that for most of these athletes, this would be like the equivalent, as I said earlier, to their Super Bowl, and this is the biggest event of their careers. So I do get that. And I'm open-minded. I can be easily swayed, and I think I already have been from my original point after the message I received that was talking about for athletes. You know, this is about the athletes, and they've been training now for 5 years for this. They should be able to have that opportunity. So I get that. My concern is just, I guess, more so from a health standpoint of having everybody get together from multiple countries in a place that's not doing very well with COVID-19 and then having those people return elsewhere and holding this event now, even when it's unsafe to have fans be there. But have athletes from all over the world come together for a few weeks for this event. I guess that would be my largest concern. It's not so much about the Olympics games themselves. But, hey, if they go off in 2 weeks, I'll be rooting for the United States to win the most golds. I appreciate your theories. I mean, you're spot on all of them. You pretty much nailed my age. You know where I'm from. And I did play sports. You know what? I'll tell you what. I won the Nutmeg Games, the Nutmeg State Games in Connecticut. I don't think I have that gold medal anymore. But we won the gold for basketball. I didn't do one of the Olympic sports. I was on the basketball team. We won the Nutmeg State Games. And let me tell you, we played the Temple, the trapping zone, like a man-to-man zone, a matchup zone. Oh, and we ran through teams, and we won the gold in Connecticut. I have no idea how old I was at the time. And we had a stacked team, and we won the gold. So it's true. I guess I should appreciate the opportunity to go compete for a medal because I had that opportunity as a kid just within Connecticut. My father went to the Olympics when they were in Montreal back in the 70s. That's the closest I ever got. I've never been to the Olympics. I've never been in an area. I went to school at Quinnipiac where they played hockey against, in Lake Placid against, who was it, St. Lawrence? Whatever school's up there with Miracle on Ice. But I never made that trip, fortunately, because that was such a hike. But when I worked in the broadcast of even the hockey team, I never made that trip. I would be back in studio instead and not have to worry about that. As I said, I don't have a strong opinion either way, but I'm not. I don't care. You play the Olympics in 2 weeks, I'll follow along. I'm not the biggest Olympic guy, so I won't watch a ton more than the basketball. But I'll pay attention. And I'll be rooting for this country if and when the Olympics go off 2 weeks from today. But if you cancel the Olympics, I would also understand that as well. Because at this point, we've already pushed it back a year. No fans are allowed. Right? They're struggling. They're going into a lockdown situation in Tokyo. Athletes coming from all over. If you told me, like, hey, it's probably best if we don't do this, I get it. And it's not from an Olympic sports standpoint. Like I said, it's more about the health aspect. The sports itself, I would love for the athletes to have the opportunity to compete in this way. If it can be done safely and if it can be worthwhile. But I don't have a strong opinion. I've come to realize that while talking this out. Originally, I thought, why are we having the Olympics? What's the point? Why are we still continuing with this? Is the juice worth the squeeze at this point? It's too much trouble for the outcome. But it certainly is a fair question or debate. Should we have the Olympics still at this point? Was that a crushing blow this week announcing no fans? Protests are going on where people are saying the Olympics should not occur. Right, the idea is if it's unsafe to have fans there, why is it safe to have people from all over the world? If it's unsafe to have local fans there, why have athletes from all over the world come into that area, to that hot spot, if you can't handle having local fans come and go from the Olympic site? Now you're talking about, a global health crisis with people going back home to their countries afterwards. But if we can do it safely, then do it. Go ahead, even without any fans, because that's what we did for basketball and football. A little bit different. This is on a larger scale in another country with people from all over the world instead of watching Ohio State against Northwestern, play in Ohio with fewer people involved. A little bit different. But we obviously have seen sports can be played without fans in a safe environment during this pandemic and still have the ability to enjoy said sporting events. And I guess that'll be the case with the Olympics in 2 weeks. It'll be unusual, no fans, but if it goes off without a hitch, hey, good for the athletes involved because that's what they have been dreaming for, practicing, training for all these years. I get the idea that you don't want to take away the opportunity for them when they have so few opportunities to compete on this stage. And if you can still pull this off, allow those athletes the opportunity. Certainly went longer in the Olympics than planned, but I appreciate the input. Coming up, we'll probably do the big two at two coming back. Plus, we had a spelling bee champion last night. Big news. Forget the Stanley Cup champion this week. Forget the Euro 2020 champion we'll have on Sunday. What about the spelling bee and the champion we had there? Get to that coming up. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today. due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I want to tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners. Lyerly's, now with their to-go service, can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them, 843-377-6994, to schedule a free pickup. You can even track your dry cleaning, see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. And just mention that you heard about Lyerly's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now their to-go service, easier than ever before. So we certainly spent more time on the Olympics than I was even planning. But I do appreciate the input and the conversation and dialogue. The Olympics set to take place 2 weeks from now. I don't have a strong opinion on it, as I've said multiple times this afternoon. I just wonder if the game should continue if it's not in a safe environment to have the fans. But I also can admit, appreciate, and understand the athlete's perspective, where they've been waiting for this moment their entire lives, and more specifically have been training for the past 5 years now with the one-year delay to have this opportunity to go compete and to compete on that national stage and to represent their country and to battle or compete against other countries athletically and to try to bring home those golds for the United States in particular, in our case. So I certainly get where the athletes come from. But it's almost like, you know, in injuries, when you have to say you have to protect the athlete from themselves. Same idea when you talk about the safety or health concerns with this whole thing. You got to make sure you protect the athletes from themselves as well, to make sure everyone can be in a safe and healthy environment through this pandemic, because Japan is not quite in the situation we are here, where they're far worse. I mean, it's why they just had to declare a state of emergency over there and kind of lock down and say no fans at these Olympics. Joe, are you into the Olympics, the Summer Olympics in particular?
I think it probably just depends on what's on and, yeah, what's going on.
If you were an Olympic athlete, if you spent your whole life training, what Olympic sport do you think you would do or try to?
Let me see. I'm trying to think of some of the sports. Well, I played growing up. I did play basketball 1 year.
Oh.
I played soccer for a bit growing up. So more likely one of those two sports, or maybe karate.
Oh,
because I did study Kenpo for a while.
How about that? That'd be cool. I would watch that. Now that you get me to a TV for.
Because they have martial arts. They have judo. I forget what other forms of karate they have at the Olympics.
And hey, in 2024, you could be the a break dancer at the Olympics. I'm sure you were a big break dancer back in the day, so you could have trained for that. Now that's becoming an Olympic sport, apparently. If I could pick any Olympic sport that I could ever be good enough to participate in, it would be curling, because like I said earlier, I just love curling. And even in Connecticut, where I grew up, I never went, but there was like a, I don't know if it's a gym, what do they call it? I don't know, a place that you could go curl. You could go play curling. I don't know what they call the location, right? Like a basketball game is in a basketball gym. You have a football game in a stadium. I don't know, curling, what is that in? A hall? I don't know, wherever they have curling, there was one in Connecticut that as the public, like you could go and probably rent out and practice or play or whatever. Curling always looks so fun. I would love to just try it and see how it goes. But I love what now that's obviously in the Winter Olympics. But I love watching curling. I don't know what it is about that sport. I'll watch it every time it's on. All right. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the show on demand online, charlestonsportsradio.com, or through our free app. Download the app ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Find the show on demand there. Better late than never. Joe, grab the Big 2 at 2 intro. We usually do this to start the 2 o'clock hour. Then we went down the whole avenue there with the Olympics. So it's still the 2 o'clock hour. Better late than never. Let's recap two of the biggest stories of the day outside of the Olympics with our Big 2 at 2.
The Big Two at Two, where Luke recaps the two biggest stories of the day right here on the Morrow Midday Show.
Yeah, the Big Two at 2:30, as Joe said, right? Same idea. Big Two at 2:30. Number one being Game 2 of the NBA Finals last night. And this is how we opened the show this afternoon. But the Bucks made their adjustments and still lost Game 2. I said on the show yesterday, I thought Game 2 would come down to two things. How much healthier is Giannis 2 days later? Because when Giannis was on the floor in Game 1, they outscored the Suns. So if he's even better, if he's healthier, if he's out there more often, right, they could try to outscore the Suns by even more and steal a game on the road. And the second part would be the adjustments. When we talked with Coach Mike Anheuser, head coach of the Charleston Battery earlier, he was talking about the same thing, right? That you're always trying to make adjustments. The other team's watching film. They know what to expect. You got to throw him some curveballs because he's going up against a friend of his Monday night when they play New Mexico. And he's been watching the film, and he knows, but he said, hey, they're going to throw some wrinkles our way because they know that we know what to expect, so then they want to make us not know what to expect with some sort of adjustment on Monday. It's the same idea in all sports with coaching, and it was the same idea last night in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. The Bucks did make their adjustments. I thought last night's game would come down to the adjustments made by the Bucks and the health or output from Giannis. And you know what? The Bucks did both of those things. They improved in both of those areas and still lost the game. Giannis was excellent. Scored 42 points. Played more minutes. Outscored the Suns when he was on the floor. He was great. But his teammates weren't good enough. And that was the letdown. Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton did not play well enough. They didn't shoot it well whatsoever. They did not hold up their end of the bargain. They let Giannis down. He was a one-man wrecking machine. And the Bucks lost last night in Game 2. The second part was the adjustments. The Bucks did make their adjustments. But then the Suns adjusted to the adjustments. And I compared it earlier to the movie Heat from the 90s. Came out about 25 years ago. Michael Mann film with De Niro and Pacino. A 90s classic. And you see this in all movies that involve criminals. But as you watch the movie, right, the whole movie, it's a two-hour movie. You can't have the criminal get caught in the first 30 minutes. What's the fun in that? So how are they always eluding the cops? How are they always avoiding the police? Well, they're always staying one step ahead. And whenever you watch these movies, right, they never make a movie about the dumb criminals. And there's plenty of those. Read the news. It's always these crafty criminals, and they always know how to stay one step ahead of the police. And that was the case in Heat, where Robert De Niro was the bad guy. Pacino, Al Pacino, was the good guy. He was the cop. And they were camping out. They were doing a stakeout, listening in to De Niro with his associates. They thought they had him down at the docks, listening in. Oh, we got him now. They didn't know what he was doing, but they knew he was doing something wrong. And they didn't know what exactly. And then De Niro drives off. And Pacino and all his cop buddies walk out into the open where De Niro previously was standing. And they're looking around and they're thinking, okay, what is he doing? He's doing something. We don't know what he's doing. And they're looking around and they're trying to figure it out. And the line they kept saying is, you know, what are we looking for? Or what are we looking at? That's what it was. What are we looking at here? Are we looking at drugs? Are we looking at guns? Are we looking at something else? Pacino even mentions hubcaps. Like that's what the big bad crime boss is doing. Stealing rims off of cars. But they're talking to each other. What are we looking at? And then it dawns on Pacino. He realizes, because he's a good cop, he's looking around and he realizes, you know what they're looking at? They're looking at us. And the whole thing was a setup. And De Niro, they zoom out and you see De Niro from far away taking photos through a large lens watching Pacino because he now knew, okay, these are the people that are after me. These are the people I have to look out for. These are the cops that are trying to hunt me down. Because just like Pacino didn't know what De Niro was doing, he knew he was doing something wrong. He didn't know what. De Niro knew people were tracking him. He just didn't know who they were. But now he did. So when Pacino thought that he got him, he thought he cornered him, he thought, oh, I made a great police move. Oh, we got him now. We have their location. We're listening to their conversation. Let's find out what they're doing. And as they walked out into the open to try to figure it out, De Niro, meanwhile, was taking photos, and he got Pacino instead. He made the adjustment. He adjusted to the adjustment and said, okay, well, I know what you're trying to do. Let me stay one step ahead of you. And the scene ends with Pacino mother-effing De Niro out in the open. He doesn't know where he is. But he knows he's watching Pacino. He knows Pacino knows he was just had. As he says to his partners, we've been made. And he's yelling out, mother effer, right at De Niro, because he's very upset that De Niro pulled one on him. He stayed a step ahead. That's how you don't get caught. And it's the same idea in these playoff series. It's the same idea in coaching. You know the other team's going to make their adjustments from game to game. So how do you stay one step ahead? The Suns couldn't come out in game two and do the same exact thing because you know the Bucks were going to change their approach. So you had to make sure your approach was different to handle their adjustments. And that's exactly what Phoenix did. In the first quarter, the Suns started out slow. 1 of 9 on 2-point shots. Didn't get to the free throw line. Were trailing at the end of the first quarter. The Bucks altered how they handled the pick and roll. That was the big adjustment they had to make. They adjusted. And then so too did the Suns. And it led to three-pointers. Three-pointer after three-pointer was a three-point barrage. The Suns set a record. They shot 50% from beyond the arc. They made 23-pointers. And they went on to win game two by double digits anyways, even with the Bucks making adjustments. Even with Giannis playing more minutes, scoring more points, dropping 42, it still wasn't enough because the Suns were able to stay one step ahead. How do these criminals not get caught? By staying one step ahead in these movies. How do the Suns not get caught in this series? By staying one step ahead of the Bucks, and they've done that the first two games. In game one, the Bucks had no answer for that pick and roll. They were caught off guard. Then they said, okay, we'll be prepared for this in game two. And they were. But what they weren't prepared for was the open shooters that were left on Phoenix offensively or the ball movement that they used and were able to knock down those threes. And the Bucks couldn't stop them from beyond the arc. The Suns outscored the Bucks by 33 points from three-point range and won by double digits once again. Now, as we head to game three, we have to make adjustments to the adjustments to the adjustments to the adjustments, right? It keeps going as the series goes on. Let's find out on Sunday. The Bucks saw, okay, that's what you did, right? You took our swing and came back with another hook. Here's what we're going to do to counteract that on Sunday. And the Phoenix Suns now, in the 2 days leading up to Game 3, know, okay, they're probably going to do something different to try to defend this better at the three-point line. So what do we do next? You always have to try to stay one step ahead, and the Suns have been able to do that the first two games of this series. Story number two for the Big Two at Two is the Gamecocks. I was thinking about this. We were talking about the All-Star game earlier, talking about the football season only being 50 days away. And there's an old expression in baseball that people use all the time that you're going to lose 60 games, you're going to win 60 games, and your season will come down to the other 42. That will determine your season in baseball. Everyone's going to lose 60 games over the course of the season. Everyone's going to win 60 games. If you make the playoffs, it will be dependent on what you do in those other 42. And as I was thinking of the Gamecocks' upcoming season and looking at their football schedule, I think it's the same way. I think they have four losses built in, four wins built in, and their season will come down to the other four games. And if you look at ESPN's FPI, it kind of backs up what I believe. They give South Carolina a chance to win four games. Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, Troy, and Vanderbilt. Those are the four games in which the Gamecocks are favored in. And ESPN's FPI gives them a 61% chance or greater of winning each of those four games. Then there are four games on the schedule that I think are just built-in losses. They're just not going to win. And that's at Georgia, at Texas A&M, and then Florida at home, Clemson at home. Outside of the Florida game, those other three matchups, ESPN's FPI gives South Carolina less than a 7% chance of winning. Those are the built-in losses. I think Florida is as well. So now you're sitting at 4-4 when looking at the schedule with four other games to decide your season. And that would be Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, and I would say Auburn. I think Auburn or Florida, you know, take your pick. I choose Auburn as the toss-up game. I think Florida is the loss. ESPN's FPI gives the Gamecocks a 43% chance of beating Kentucky, 31% chance of beating Tennessee, 30% to beat Missouri, and a 25% chance to beat Auburn. And those are the four games that will decide how things go for the Gamecocks in year one of Shane Beamer. You split those games, yeah, well, then you're a 500 team. You split those games, you split your season. And for year one of Shane Beamer, that's actually a successful year. 6-6, go to a bowl game, try to win the bowl game, go 7-6, that'd be a good year. You win 3 out of 4, obviously an even better year. You win all 4, that's a great year. Just like in baseball, if you win the majority of those other 42 games, you're winning over 100 games that season, or at least close to it, and that's a really good year. So it's going to come down to those four swing games. When you look at a baseball schedule, you look at the Braves schedule at the beginning of every year, you know immediately, it doesn't matter who they're playing, when they're playing, there are 60 losses baked in, there are 60 wins. Not many teams win more than 100 games. Not many teams lose more than 100 games. You got 60 wins, 60 losses. Okay, our season will come down to the other 42 games. Now, in baseball, you don't know when those games are. It's not like you circle that one. Okay, that's one of the 42, and that's one of the 42. The idea is just every team will lose 60 games in the season. Every team will win 60 games. How do you do in the other ones? For South Carolina, we know when those other four games are. We know the four games that we can safely say, yeah, they'll win those. I feel confident picking them to win those four games. We know the four games where I think I feel confident saying, yeah, they're going to lose those. And then there's the other four games that are a little more difficult to choose, a little more difficult to pick. Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, and I'll even give them Auburn at home. And those are the four swing games that will decide their season this year, year one of Shane Beamer. And if you go 6-6, you just have to split those games. Go 6-6, go to a bowl game. That's a successful year one. By the way, ESPN's FPI has South Carolina projected for 4.5 wins this year. They have them ranked as the 68th best team in the country, and they give them a 0% chance of winning out or winning the SEC. According to the FPI numbers, South Carolina plays the 16th toughest schedule in the country this year. So not quite the toughest, but obviously when you're in the SEC, you always have a tough schedule. All right, coming up, we had the Spelling Bee last night. Had another champion this week. We had a champion in the NHL. We'll have a champion in the NBA in the next week and a half. We'll have a champion in the Euro 2020 Cup this weekend. Wimbledon's going on this weekend. But most importantly, we crowned the champion in the Spelling Bee last night. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
On a funky finish to your Friday afternoon and the work week as we head into the weekend. Here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Crowned another champion, I guess you could say, in the sports world last night. Get to that coming up before we go here this afternoon. Hey, you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com. You can also stream the show on TuneIn Radio. Tell your smart speaker to play the Morrow Midday Show or ESPN Radio Charleston. And, of course, download our new app. Head on over to the App Store, search ESPN Charleston, download the free app, and you can listen live from anywhere in the world right there through the app. And also on demand, the podcasts are available through the app as well. So download our free app today, ESPN Charleston. That's all you have to search in the App Store and find it there. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 7 different states and multiple countries throughout this Friday afternoon as we head into the weekend. We'll be back on the air, of course, Monday. It'll be the All-Star break in baseball, and in the sports world, next week is always considered the worst sports week of the year. But at least we will have the NBA Finals continuing and everything else going on. The Olympics are 2 weeks away. That's unique, of course. That doesn't happen every summer. So, and next week we'll have former big league players joining us at least Monday through Thursday. See if we can work on Friday as well. But we'll have former big league players join us at the midway point of the baseball season. And I heard Jeff Passan on ESPN on Greeny yesterday leading into our show talking about how he still is waiting on the Braves to turn things around. But as we talked throughout this week, I think you'll just keep on waiting. At this point, we're more than halfway through the season, and the Braves, I think, have shown who they are. And you can wait and wait and wait, and then eventually it's going to be October, and the Braves still will be under 500 and not in the playoff race, and you'll realize the whole season went by. You were still waiting for them to turn around, and it never did. And Chris Carlin, I thought, made a good comparison as he fills in for Greeny and said it's like that lawnmower, right, that you're always yanking and just won't start up. You're always pulling on the lawnmower to try to get it cranked up. And it just won't go. And that's kind of like the Braves. Actually, he was talking about the Yankees. But I think it applies to the Braves as well. That you're just waiting for them to go on that winning streak or to turn things around or to get back into it, to reach 500. Right? Keep yanking on that rope, on that string of the lawnmower, hoping it's going to turn over. It's going to crank at some point, and it just never does. And that's like the Braves. You get close. Right? Every once in a while, you get the sounds of the lawnmower. It sounds like it's starting up. You get a little hum in there, and then nothing. Never turns over. You can't get that thing cranked. That's like the Braves. Every once in a while, they get 500. You think, oh, here we go. They win 20-2. They win 5 games in a row. We think, oh, here we go. Lawnmower's about to start up. We got this sucker going. And then they lose 3 in a row. Or they lose a series to the last place Pirates. Right? Or this happens. The bullpen blows a game. This guy gets injured. That happens. And it's like, oh, no, it's actually not going to start just yet. The lawnmower is still not starting. The Braves still haven't turned it around, and we're about, 90 games into the season at this point, approaching the All-Star break, at a certain point, you got to do something to make me a believer. Otherwise, you know, you're just hanging on to that hope, waiting, hoping something's going to come, and it never does. Like the kid outside waiting for his father to come pick him up, and he never shows up, and you're just sitting there waiting the whole time, and eventually, I mean, you know, he's never going to come. You go wait your whole life. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I think that's the case with the Braves. You know, earlier we were talking about the Olympics, and I appreciate the theories laid out by a listener, Mike, who called in, but I have to say, I was thinking about this afterwards. I thought, wait a minute. You know, it's almost like one of those backhanded, not even a backhanded compliment, but it's like one of those sly insults where you, when you say to somebody, hey, you outkicked your coverage, right? That's a nice thing to say, I guess, for the other part of the relationship. I don't know if that's a compliment. We take that as a compliment. Like, yeah, that's right. I got somebody who, you know, shouldn't normally be with me. That's not a compliment. When they say, hey, you really outkicked your coverage, what they're saying is like, yeah, you don't belong with someone like that. Like, you don't deserve somebody like that, whether it's based off of attractiveness or personality. Like, yeah, you actually should be doing a lot worse. You're not on that person's level. You're pretty bad looking, or you have a lousy personality. Like, it's really not a compliment when you think about it. And people say, like, you outkicked her coverage. People are, oh, thank you, I know, yes, oh, she's beautiful. But what are they saying about you? Maybe you don't care. But when they say you outkicked her coverage, that's not really a kind thing for you. So Mike earlier said, he asked if I played sports growing up. I don't know, should I take this personally? Do I come off as somebody who, do I sound like an unathletic person? Do I sound like somebody who couldn't play sports growing up? Now, I didn't play them well, I'll be honest with you. And most broadcasters get into this position because they couldn't play the sports. I've had this conversation many times with people over the years, especially when it comes to play-by-play broadcasters, which, of course, I also do with the Citadel. In terms of on-air hosts, that's a little bit different. Or like the sports analysts you watch on TV. If they're breaking down the game, if they're a former athlete breaking down the game, that's one thing. They obviously could play the sport. But most of the straight guys, as they were, that set up the analysts, the play-by-play guy or the guy sitting at the desk hosting the show, right, a lot of them didn't play sports necessarily at a high level. But there are certain people that get into this industry. I break them down into three categories. But one of them are the athletes that, you know, maybe played in college but at a small college, never went pro, and so they want to stay around the sports. And another category of the broadcaster is the person who can never play the sports, and that's why they got into broadcasting. But I am somewhat in between. I did play all the sports growing up. I just didn't play them well. But I played basketball, football, baseball, soccer. I ran cross country in high school. That was miserable. That was just to stay in shape for the basketball season. Did that for 1 year. That was terrible. In fact, when I was on the cross country team, and I guess this goes to Mike's point, I always faked shin splints because they, you know, there's no way to prove it. It's not like you have a bump on your leg. I'd always say to the coach, I got shin splints. I can't run today. And he'd say, okay, you go inside. And I'd go. I'd have to go work out on the stationary bike in our high school gym. But there was a TV there. The stationary bike. So it was great. So I watched a lot of Mad TV because that's what else is on at like 3 o'clock midweek. You got either Jerry Springer or Mad TV on. And so I would just sit there on the stationary bike and watch Mad TV.
And Mad TV is actually funny.
It was. I used to like Mad TV. That was, you know, Saturday Night Live is obviously on Saturday nights, but Mad TV, I don't know when they aired new episodes, but the reruns were on all the time. You turn on like Comedy Central during the week. Mad TV was always on. And the way our high school gym was set up was there was two doors. So you could hear the first door from the coach coming in from outside, but then he still had to come to the second door to walk into the gym in order to see if we were actually properly working out on the stationary bikes. So it was perfect. When you heard that first door, you knew he was coming, so then you'd start pedaling by the time you got to the second door. So I did play the sports growing up. I just didn't play them well. We filibustered enough here in the final segment before we go that Joe has been saved. We had the spelling bee last night, which, of course, is always a big event in the quote-unquote sporting world. I don't know if it's considered a sport. They consider it a sport. It's on ESPN. And we were going to put Joe to the test this afternoon of trying to spell ridiculous names of athletes or coaches. You know, like Coach K having to spell that last name, or Giannis Antetokounmpo spelling his last name, or any of the other athletes currently in the sports world with ridiculous names. But Joe gets a save of execution, at least until, I don't know, maybe we'll do it next week when things are slow during the All-Star break. Maybe we'll test Joe's spelling knowledge with athletes in the sports world. But that's what we were going to do, and you're lucky. You caught a break today.
You do know all I have to do is just use this handy little computer here.
I don't know if it'd even be working properly for you. I don't know if it'd be working quick enough. So maybe we'll get to that next week. Hey, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. Enjoy the sports weekend. We got the Euro 2020 on Sunday. We got Wimbledon, and we got the All-Star break next week. We'll be joined by former big leaguers each day next week to break down the midway point of the baseball season and a whole lot more as we're 7 weeks out from the college football season. If you miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. We'll talk to you Monday at noon. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.